Hey, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of the Shop Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Phil, along with John and Logan today. Episode number 189. We're going to pick up where we left off last week on oddball clamps. We'll get some listener feedback and some updates on the woodsmith and popular woodworking front. Special message from our sponsor. You want a glue that you can trust, and fortunately, TiteBond has the glue you need to get the job done with confidence. From interior glues with strong initial tack and short clamp time to exterior glues with exceptional strength and water resistant. Look to TiteBond, the right glue for your next project. For more information, visit TiteBond.com. I think that's what we really want to emphasize here is that we are strongly tacky on this show. So
I think I think it's tastefully tacky.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Now some feedback from last week's episode, which we kind of got up a little bit late and then also got put out with on at least on YouTube with another one about like at the same time. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. E.G. Blue Suede, he says the saw milling weekend would be a blast, either free labor or take home wood scenario, as long as you have some of that cheese still around.
Sorry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a negative on the cheese.
Was it we count him out?
Right. We might get new cheese, but not that cheese.
New old cheese.
Yeah.
Which happens to the best.
Yeah. Eric says, looking forward to what you might come up with options for a sawmill weekends. Really great idea, especially for a city guy like myself. I can see that.
Oh, God, it's going to be a city slickers weekend.
Right. Yeah.
It's a dude ranch.
It's a dude ranch.
I'm very excited about this. Floyd says, I don't know how I feel about a vice president of content. If you knew Rob, you'd feel a lot better about it.
Hey, I didn't vote for him.
Yeah.
No.
Right. I mean, does anybody vote for vice president, though?
Right.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Daniel says, let's see, someone could give free labor for no lumber or give free labor and pay for lumber. Which I get where he's coming from, but... like a couple of hours just schlepping around boards and working with the sawmill does not equal in value a whole log of trees or of boards, right?
No, no. So on that note, I have friends up in Waterloo, North Waterloo, that they have two or three different sawmills, and it's a husband-wife combo. And if Terry, the wife, if she is the one pulling boards off, they charge, I think, $10 or $15 an hour more for milling than if she doesn't. Yeah. And they told me that most of the time, somebody that's having a log milled, like an hour in it, they're like, all right, I'm paying the money.
So, not worth it.
No.
Yeah. Like, I can see that, but. I mean, yes, people's time is worth something. However, the log is worth something too.
Yeah.
So, anyway, now rumor has it, Logan, you've been working on a miter saw station. You've brought that up before on the show. And you have...
Yes.
How's that going?
I was telling John right before we started. I have panels glued up. So we got dividers, right? So this is a divider. Boom. Okay. So that's one divider. So basically, this thing's going to have six of those. There'll be three on each side. Outside ends, and then one in the center, either centered or offset to create bigger and smaller cubbies, whatever. Got them all. Well, I got three of the six glued up. I have parts cut for, I think, two or three more. And I decided... right before this podcast, you know what sounds like a great idea? Running these panels through the drum sander. Because what could go wrong?
Nothing, really. I see no...
Well, there's a reason that this is not a soda in my hand. So, done for the day.
Checked out.
Yep. So you know, the drum sander kind of ate. It divoted one a little bit. That'll go in the inside and the top. So it's not a big deal. I'll make it work.
So how did it divot it? Like, what's the, what went wrong there?
I don't know. So drum sanders are stupid. Let's just throw that out there for all you drum sander lovers. They're stupid. The biggest problem I have with drum sanders is getting the grit on. Now, is this all leading to the point of user error? Yes, I think so. Okay. But putting that twirly paper on those drums and getting it on straight and getting it on where it's not going to come off is a pain in the butt. And I got that. And unfortunately, like, manufacturers don't really send – I bought this drum sander used, so I didn't get any paperwork with it. But most manufacturers don't send, like, you know, here's a template to cut the rolls of paper to the right length. So if you're, like, a half inch long or half inch short on the sandpaper, it doesn't fit right. And you have to taper the ends at a certain degree angle so when you start the wrap, everything lines up right. They're just a pain in the butt is what I'm getting at. And so I got the paper close enough. I ran one through first. I had 280, so it's a dual drum sander. So I had 280 grits on there. And that left pretty big gouges. And this is going to be painted. So I'm like, well, this is dumb. I'm going to flip one to be, or I'm sorry, I had 260 grits on.
Whoa.
Because I was flattening slabs last time with it. And then I'm like, okay, what I'm going to do actually is put an 80 grit and 100 grit on there. And it leaves a really nice surface, actually. I mean, it still needs sanded before I paint it, but it leaves a pretty good surface. Problem is, I think one of the rolls, I didn't get clear to the edge.
Oh, okay.
So as it started to feed, it got to that second roll where there wasn't sandpaper on the edge all the way, and it started leaving a ridge down one side. And as it hit the outfeed roller, it started to skew a little sideways. Stuff happened. It tripped my breaker.
Words were said.
Words. No, I didn't say any words. I thought words. Definitely thought words.
Right.
But now my inch and a half thick panel is closer to an inch and 3/8, inch and a quarter maybe. So,
all
right. Yeah, it's fine. It will work out just fine. This is real life woodworking.
There you go.
So I learned with that first panel. Unfortunately, that first panel was the hardest one to remake.
Oh.
I should have started with one that didn't, because I have those frames with panels, and then I have frames without panels. These are the interior frames.
Oh, sure.
I should have started with one of these things. Like,
yeah.
Not. I've never claimed to be a smart man, and it still holds true. But, you know, at the end of the day, I got frames pretty much started. These frames are connected by thick stretchers like this that are, it's going to basically be a self face framed cabinet, if that makes sense. So these are what are going to split those dividers up. And these are thick enough that these will become the face frame along the front edge of the cabinet. So, I'm using the Domino for all of this, which is kind of fun. And I get the appeal now because it's like just lop stuff to size. Lop it to length, and then you just bzz it together. So, yeah, super, super happy with it. No dust coming out of that Domino. Like, the dust extractor hooked up to it worked really, really well. It takes some creative putting dominoes like in the middle of an upright. So it's like, you know, putting two dominoes right here takes a little bit of creativity. It's like clamping a block onto it.
Yeah.
For a registration point. So there's some learning curve to it, but I definitely get the appeal. It's not going to replace everything I do with dominoes, but I get the appeal now. So kind of fun. Okay. It's going to be painted. The drawers and drawer frames, they're going to be frame and panel, door fronts and doors. I'm going to paint everything except the frames on the doors and drawers, and those will be cherry, and then the cherry top. So it'll be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Just just ordered a fence from Woodpeckers, their miter fence. I really am a huge fan. I've told the guys at Woodpeckers before that I feel like they need to remake it. I'm a huge fan of the Beastmeyer miter saw fence that we have in the shop back
yes.
there. I really like that one, but they don't make it anymore.
Right.
So I told the guys at Woodpeckers, like, hey, you should really remake this. But they haven't yet. So
you maybe know. Might just still be in the Skunk
someday.
Works or something.
Someday. So, yep. So we're chugging along. Like, I just shipped an issue to the printer last week, so I'm like way ahead of the game right now. Usually this is like a week until deadline. So there's a lot of travel looming, so figured right. I gotta get out front of it.
Yep.
So
I oddly enough in drum sander land, I had John show me how to change the paper on the Powermatic one that we have in the shop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which John must have had a lot of experience on it because he just pulled out a roll and cut it to length and put it on and did like one little readjustment and it was right there. He made it look easy.
It's super easy. I don't know what you're complaining about.
No. I will say, having changed the sandpaper on that Powermatic one, the Powermatic is a lot easier to put paper on.
Is it?
This Bailey, and there's two drums next to each other, so it's like they're trying to wrap around each drum as you're spinning them. This one has a lot of junk on the ends of the rollers, so if the paper hangs off the end of the roller or the drum, I guess, if the paper hangs off the end of the drum by more than like an eighth of an inch, it rubs on stuff.
Oh, really?
Whereas the Powermatic is pretty clear in there. Like, I think you could probably go a half inch wide and it would still work. But this Bailey drum sander is a lot less expensive than the Powermatic one. So
yeah, I was kind of surprised also that, a lot of those sanding drum papers have like cutting guides printed on the back face of it. And for the Powermatic, it actually lined up line to line on one of them.
Yeah. So the abrasives I have are from Klingspore.
Yep.
And I didn't buy them. They came with the drum sander. They do not.
Oh.
So I'm sitting here with you guys are in one tab. My other tab, because I'm a two-tab type of person, unlike you crazy people. My other tab has the Klingspore website opened up. Looking at the sandpaper rolls, because I only have 60, 80, and 100 grit. I'd like 150 and 120 as well. Them rolls are not cheap.
Yeah.
Like $55-$60 a roll.
Wow.
Yeah.
What grit do we put on the Powermatic, John? I don't even remember.
I don't even know. I just grabbed the first
just whatever's in the box and just pull it out.
Yeah.
I feel like it's 150.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Feels really fine, but
maybe it's 120. I know it's not like 240 or 300.
Oh yeah, no way.
But
it feels like a really good way to light wood on fire.
Yeah. Well, my issue is like, okay, I'm discovering that this Bailey is not as user. This is a bigger machine, and I feel like it would be better for doing like bigger parts. You know, if I was running like a bunch of like these things through it, okay, no problem. But for like smaller stuff, if I was doing like a little jewelry box and wanted to sand it, you know, to do some surface prep, I feel like the Powermatic's a better machine for that personally. However, I don't know that there's any what I would consider better options available. Like, I know a lot of people like the little Supermax, that little Supermax sander.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because those are designed after the old Performax ones, right?
Yeah, yeah, they are. And Laguna has some. Jet has one that's an oscillating sander, so it's open-ended and it oscillates, which is really nice. But I just get caught up on these paper rolls, the paper changes. It'd be nice if they had like actual sleeves that went on, like the spindle sanders.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That would be nice. Or I'm thinking like a I've seen somebody change. Oh, actually, I was watching an episode of the New Yankee Workshop. Norm had a big time saver white belt sander in there.
Belt ones, yeah.
Yeah. And he just opens the door, pulls a lever, slides a new belt on, and lifts lever back up. I'm like, huh, that looks sweet.
Yep.
So somebody needs to make a good little time saver. Get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just save a little time.
Yeah.
It's funny that we're talking about the drum sander because I was messaging with Ben Strano earlier this week, and he was talking about belts or the drum sanders as well because he has a small one in his shop.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, where was that? Yeah, because he does with his ukuleles, he says he does too much thin stuff not to have one.
Yeah.
And Amanda over at Fine Woodworking, he says, I know Amanda dies not having one.
Yeah. Well, and that was another interesting thing that I just saw on the spec sheet on this Bailey, is that I pulled up the manual on the Bailey website to see if they had specs like on the total length to double check the length on the paper I was cutting and stuff. They did not, but their spec sheet on this thing says minimum thickness of 1/4 inch, which to me is not, that's not very thin.
No,
because I'm thinking for a drum sander, I really want, like, I want to be able to get down to 1/8 inch. I want to be able to sand like bent lamination strips.
Right. I mean, cause I feel like that's the primary advantage of that over a planer. Is that you would be able to get way far down on it.
Yep.
Without having to do like a carrier board or something like that.
Yeah.
They're probably just saying that for legal purposes.
Yeah.
But it's like, probably. You can do it.
You can do much thinner.
For legal purposes, in the state of California, don't go thinner than 1/4 inch. But wink, wink.
Yeah. Go for it. If your mama didn't raise a weenie, you can do thinner.
Yeah.
Little word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Titebond. You want a glue that you can trust, and fortunately, Titebond has the glue you need to get the job done with confidence. From interior glues with strong initial tack and short clamp time to exterior glues with exceptional strength and water resistance, look to Titebond, the right glue for your next project. For more information, visit tightbond.com. So now you and I have both been doing classes for the Des Moines Woodworkers.
Sure have.
And those have actually, I feel like for the last few sessions, it's been tough to get people signing up. So I don't know if it's topics or it was just time of year or whatever, but the spring session feels like we've gotten more people engaged.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, we have a minimum for the Des Moines Woodworkers classes we do of 4 per class. If there's not 4 signed up, we don't hold the class. And there's a reason we do that. The cost to take the class is very minimal. I think my Kumiko class that I'm doing, I did last week, I'm doing this weekend. It's 6 hours total, so 3 hours last Saturday, 3 hours this Saturday. I want to say that was $90. I think it's like $15 per hour of class time, which is dirt cheap. I mean, that's like dirt cheap. As an attendee, that is so cheap. But the guild does pay us to teach these classes. And they pay us more than $15 an hour. But the guild doesn't make money on these. I mean, they actually lose money. It's more of a service to the members to offer these classes. And you and I teach, and there's a few others that teach as well. But yeah, it's always one of those things like, okay, I'm going to give these 3 or 4 topics, knowing full well that only 2 of the classes are going to meet the minimum.
Right.
So my one class, unfortunately, I would really like to teach this Dowd cabinet class.
Oh, yeah.
And I have one person signed up for it. So that one may not make the cut. But the Kumiko one did. The little splay leg table that I did. That one worked out really well because I did a demonstration for St. Louis Guild. And then the following week, I was teaching that class. So that all worked out really nicely. And then you had, what were your classes you just had? Because I know you had one of them last weekend.
Yeah, I did a four session class on a round craftsman style table. It was based off of an article from Woodworking Magazine, that kind of little offshoot that Popular Woodworking did a bunch of years ago. Fine Woodworking has done a plan for this table as well. And that was a really cool class. There were like six or seven people in it. And I put a strong emphasis on some hand skills in it, in terms of like cutting half lap joints and the like lap dovetail where the stretcher, top stretchers intersect with the legs and that kind of thing. So yeah, it was a really good class. And then starting what'll be Saturday, the day after this podcast comes out, I'm teaching a three session class on a craftsman style book rack that we did in Woodsmith. Cool.
Yeah. The one thing I found with teaching these classes, at least teaching here, you've held yours at the former president of Des Moines Woodworkers. He has a pretty big shop. And I've taught there as well. But teaching at either of those locations, like, boy, it would sometimes be nice to have three table saws.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you got people trying to wait in line for these things. You know, for bigger projects, like something like the book, you know, the doweled cabinet, or, you know, that mission style table you did. It's like you can get people going on different things at different times.
Right.
But for some of the things I'm doing, it's like, well, we have to do these in order. Like the Kumiko class, the first thing we did last weekend was everybody made three of these Kumiko jigs, you know? So we made these. So it's like, well, everybody needs to get to the router table to cut that groove. And then we need to all be using the table saw to cut these accurate angles. So there's all these, like, everyone's standing around watching everybody else cut. So I was trying to convince, or just talking to the people in the class, like, all right, guys, we need to figure out how I can pitch this to my wife that I need to get a second table saw.
There you go.
That ain't ever going to happen. So. They are fun to teach, though. We get a variety of people with a variety of
starting points.
Yes. I would say I've had people that have, you know, I had one lady in this last two classes. She's never touched a tool ever. So she's like, hey, first class I'm going to take is that shaker spoiling table class. And she emailed me after I sent out the plan. It's like, hey, here's the tools to bring if you have them. If you don't, it's fine. She's like, I may have bit off more than I can chew. I'm like, you're fine. So she did great. Yeah. And then she actually was in my Kumiko class too. So, you know, it's like we get people that I know, and you'll quickly realize who has a decent shop at home.
Right.
Based upon how they bring their parts to the class. So it's like some people, it's like, well, you know, these are all 33 ish, give or take 3 inches. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Cause then you can get, you know, the people that don't have a shop set up, you can get them through, and it's kind of like, hey, you know, we know you guys have, you know, a decent table saw at home, you know, make these cuts at home.
Yeah, you can do some homework kind of thing.
Yeah, here's your homework. So. Yeah, 100%. So they're fun, though.
You should teach a class where they have to have all the parts cut, like at the home center chop saw. Like, God. Have the worker cut them. And
that may have been an upgrade for this Splay Lake table class.
All right. That's fair.
Yeah. So it's fun, though. I enjoy this Kumiko class that I have. So we did our first session last week. Last session is tomorrow, or Saturday. We were going to cancel. I actually sent the email to cancel it because we had three people. And I was going to go do some other stuff this week, or this weekend, or last weekend. And I sent the email saying, hey, guys, sorry, we didn't have enough people. I'll offer to get in the fall. Let's figure out how we can get it done. You know, maybe I'll come give a little presentation to the club during one of the meetings and see if we can fill out the class or whatever. And I knew exactly what was going to happen. I think I told you this, Phil. It's like, I know I'm going to send this email, and then I'm going to have somebody say, hey, is there still room in that class?
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened. I had a guy from Des Moines email and say, hey, I'm not a woodworker, but man, I really would like to learn this. Like, hey, cool. I just canceled the class, but you're the class savior. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So they're fun.
All right. One of the other things I wanted to talk about today is oddball clamps. Not long ago, I acquired this cabinet clamp in order to create a pair from one that I had, another one of these that I had found at a antique store. I guess it's an antique store, antique mall in town. It's a place called the Picker Nose. Kind of a great, you never know what you're going to find there. Anyway, so this one was the one that I got originally. It was made by Shop Fox. It's an aluminum cabinet clamp. So it's got your kind of aluminum bar clamp. I'll put photos of these on the show notes page. But for all the people watching on the YouTubes, kind of like an aluminum bar clamp for the adjustable head, and then a little cam device for connecting or grabbing onto like a shelf or a case top or bottom. So that you put it on, start clamping it down, and you can use it to clamp like a shelf to a case side, which is great if you don't have, you know, if you're working on a really large case and don't have super long clamps. So, however, if you have one clamp, that's not as versatile as having two clamps of a given size or style. So I ended up getting one. The other one that I got was from the Dubuque Clamp Works here in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And theirs is also aluminum. Or as Chris Fitch calls it, New Caledonian pewter.
Yep.
And there is definitely a construction difference between the two of them. They're, the Dubuque Clamp Works one is a fantastic piece of engineering. So anyway, I've always admired these clamps and wanted to get them. And picking up the one at the antique mall was my excuse for being able to have two. I also think personally that this kind of clamp would be ideal for assembling pocket hole joints, because you're pulling the parts together and can keep them flush while you drive the screws for the pocket holes without having to have really big clamps. So I was wondering if either of you guys had kind of a proclivity towards some type of an oddball clamp.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to grab it.
Yeah, the ones that we just used, I think Chris was using them, that to pinch the miters together, the little spring.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Called, the like miter rings or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are pretty handy that not everybody would have in their toolbox, but, you know, come in handy when you're putting miters together.
Yes, because I do not like putting miters together. And I was watching what project was that Chris was doing that for?
The birdhouse. He was working on the miter coved roof.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
It was kind of an oddball shape. So.
Yeah, because Steve Johnson in the shop here had a box of them with a variety of ring sizes too, which I didn't realize that they had different sizes. And those clamps always seems kind of gimmicky to me. Like it. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but Chris just, and you know, it's Chris also, but he just was like, snap,
you
snap,
gotta
snap,
take
snap,
it
snap.
For what it's worth.
And he had like four, like you said, John, three dimensionally shaped roof pieces, all glued up, flat, tight seams. It's hard to watch sometimes.
Yeah. If you do a lot of like crown molding, I would think you'd use them all the time, but.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I generally use like the F-style and parallel clamps. Those are my main ones. I have four I-beam clamps, for like big panel glue ups, but I don't use those very often. Those are the hardest to get to because it's Adam Savage's order of retrievability, right? Like the stuff you use the least can go in the back.
Right.
The ones that I have that I actually really like that I get a lot of questions about is this set. You guys seen these before?
It looks like a model of a pipe organ.
Yeah, it is a model of a pipe organ. This is a box clamp set from a guy down in, I think, Kansas City. They're stamped Van Ton, VAN-TON. It's a gentleman that owns owned a machine shop, was making these as box clamps. So it's one of those, you have to order them by writing him a letter and he'll send you, I want to say that this, I actually just sent his name to a subscriber because these clamps, I first saw them from Doug Stowe, the box dude.
Okay.
And they're fantastic. So what they are these little aluminum angles here.
All right.
One end is threaded. One end is passed through.
Oh, okay.
So they are, it's like a picture frame clamp is exactly what this is. It's like a picture frame clamp, but it's sized for boxes. They work beautifully. I want to say that this entire set here, which is 8 of these, so it'd be enough to basically clamp up a box with a set on top and the bottom edge of the box. Sure. I want to say it was like $65.
So pretty reasonable.
They're very reasonable. Could you put it together yourself? Probably not. I couldn't. Like, my time's more valuable than that. It's like, what are you paying yourself? We talked about this.
$65. I mean, you're not going to get the parts from McMaster Car for
$65. Oh, no, you're not. Right. I mean, and how much time you have cutting all thread apart and keeping it from getting burrs on it. So it's a great little set. I don't use it all the time, but if I'm doing like little boxes or something that is, I don't remember what the size is. I want to say the size is maximum of 12 by 12, I want to say. But it's a great little set. It's one of those sets that will always be on my shelf on my clamp rack. Don't use it all the time, but when I do, it's invaluable. The other one is that we have, it's not an oddball, it's an oddball size though. The gigantic F-style clamps. Like the ones that weigh 75 pounds, they have like an 18 inch throat on them. Oh my gosh. When you have to reach in and hold the hull of the Titanic together, that's what you're reaching for. Phil must be grabbing one because there must be one over there. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
I mean,
those are not cheap. Like, we have
they're so expensive.
Yeah,
I couldn't even tell you what the price on them are. Let's see if I can find it real quick.
Or if you know Chris Fitch and you have Chris make this bad boy.
That is true. I forgot about
it
that.
It won't even fit on the screen.
Yeah, it's too big the screen.
Yeah.
The deep reach clamp he designed for Woodsmith. I will put a photo of it on the show notes page. And I think we have a plan for this one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll put a link to the plan. Oh, we did it for the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Last season.
Right. So check that
it's
out.
It's out there.
Yeah, I can't even find the Bessie deep reach clamp to see what the price of them are because they're expensive.
Yeah.
I bought two because we have two in the shop there.
Right.
And so I bought two. The last Bessie order I did, I was like, I'm going to throw a couple of these on there. Doubled the price of my order. But it was like, when you need them, you can't get away. They're just so dang handy.
Right. So,
I don't even want to know what the clamping force is on them because they're pretty insane. But, there's always other ways to clamp stuff too. We've used surgical tubing before.
Yeah.
I have them over here. We made those. I feel like we did them on the show. We did a clamping episode, didn't we?
Yep.
Like the wooden.
Made like three different types of clamps.
Yeah.
I think picture frame clamp.
I like these ones.
The cam clamps, the wood clamps. We also did
The wedged. The ones with the wedges.
Oh, yeah, for edging. Yep. There's the Logan's got the. Oh, there's the. edging clamp. Yep.
Yep. So yes, we made these. Like, and these are handy, but I mean, these are, in my opinion, these are basically standard F style clamps.
Right.
I like these
a little bit more delicate.
I say I like these for like delicate thin stuff where it's like I don't need a lot of pressure. Like stuff I'm holding together with super glue. These little guys are
just a little peer pressure.
Just a little peer pressure.
Not a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. To be fair, I've never used these. So like I don't these are considered face frame clamps, right?
Yeah. No, they're like putting edging on plywood panels. Like,
you just bust up masking tape.
Well, what is it? What is edging except a thin face frame?
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Yep. So,
shop notes. I don't use plywood. Shop notes a long time ago had an edging clamp that was a cool design. Mm. And I wonder if that's a plan. That one would be a cool one to.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to write that down. And put that on the make a plan, and maybe we'll do that as a free plan for a limited time once I can get that up there.
Yeah. I feel like we grabbed one of the old shop notes plans. I think it was that edging clamp.
Yeah.
Because it was just kind of quirky, weird.
Right.
So it's probably up there already. Might be a free plan.
Okay. All right. If it is, I'll put it in the show notes page. So there you go. I'd like to know what anybody else's oddball clamp is something that you have, even if like Logan's like the box clamp, you know, something that you don't use all the time, but it's just kind of fun knowing that you have it in your shop or you just have some kind of a weird attachment to it or a specific model. Like, what is the one models like Wexler clamps or something like that, where they have kind of a cult following that people just feel like they need to. Just need to have.
I think it's the Wunsler clamp.
The Wunsler, yes, that's the one. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was thinking. Unless. Mm-hmm. So. All right. So just let us know what those are. And I think that wraps up another episode of the Shop Notes podcast. Thanks everybody for listening and joining us. The way the world works is that through recommendations and ratings and reviews, more woodworkers get to see and hear podcasts if they have reviews on them. So if you think it's worthy, wherever you get your podcast, please leave a high rating and review for us. That would be most appreciated. If you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, send them to me at woodsmith@woodsmith.com or put them in the comments section on our YouTube channel where you can see us and also see some of the clamps that we're talking about. Special thanks to Tight Bond Glue for this month for sponsoring the podcast. They have all kinds of glues. Hide glue, quick drying speed set glue, quick and thick, Type Bond 3, Original 2, all of it. It's all there. Even some veneer glue. So you want to check it out at typebond.com. And we'll see you next week, everybody. Bye.